president's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark. I was on Simmons Freeway earlier, and even the freeway was jam-packed with spectators waiting their chance to see the president as he made his way toward the trademark.
Three girls and I were walking to our English class at Rogers High School in Tulsa. We heard over the PA system that Kennedy had been shot. We immediately went to the office to find out if it was really true, and at first everybody thought it was a joke. And then they turned on the televisions in the classrooms, and we found out that he really had been shot. Everybody was in tears.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by just a moment, please. Something has happened in the motorcade route. Stand by, please.
It was around noontime. We were sitting there in the workshop here eating our dinner, and they broke in and said that in Dallas, Texas, the president had been shot, but they didn't say whether he'd been killed or not. They just said he was being rushed to the hospital and they'd have a bulletin later on, you know.
Parkland Hospital, there has been a shooting. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound. I repeat, a shooting in the motorcade in the downtown area. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound.
I was listening to the television while I ironed, sort of watching it, and the program was interrupted, and we had the news, first of all, that the president had been shot, and then a short time thereafter that the president was dead.
The president's car is now going past me. The limousine is now traveling at a very high rate of speed. Secret Service men standing up in the limousine. They are armed with submachine guns. It appears as though someone in the limousine might have been hit by the gunfire.
12:30 p.m., Friday, November 22nd, 1963. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy assassinated as he was leaving downtown Dallas on his way to a noon luncheon. An event of such magnitude that anyone alive and old enough to remember can tell you exactly where they were and what they were doing when the news of the shooting was first reported. John Kennedy was elected president in 1960 by the slimmest of margins, defeating then-Vice President Richard Nixon. On that cold, sunny day that John F. Kennedy became the 35th President of the United States, America and indeed the world watched as this youngest president ever was inaugurated on the steps of the U.S. Capitol and delivered an inaugural address that stirred all who listened.
Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today, at home and around the world.
The presidency of John Kennedy is widely viewed by historians to have been one that forever changed the office, one that was as much lauded for style as for substance. During his nearly 3 years as president, Kennedy faced many challenges at home and abroad, from questions of steel prices and civil rights in this country to Berlin and missiles in Cuba. His was an active presidency, one that was always challenging Americans to greatness and extolling the virtues of Western freedoms. The decision to travel to Texas in November of 1963 was made after several prominent Texas politicians pleaded with the president to visit their state to bolster chances for the Democrats in the 64 elections. Kennedy, looking forward to his re-election campaign a year away, agreed. The itinerary for the presidential trip would take Kennedy to San Antonio, Houston, Fort Worth, Dallas, and Austin on November 21st and 22nd. The president was accompanied on the trip by his lovely wife, Jacqueline, affectionately known to millions as simply Jackie. The crowds that greeted the Kennedys in Texas were enormous. After successful events in Houston and San Antonio on Thursday, the 21st, a big day was planned for Friday, the 22nd. The morning of November 22nd began with an early morning rally outside his hotel in Fort Worth. A misty rain was falling, but 5,000 people stood in the rain to see their president. Another audience awaited the president inside, as 2,500 guests had gathered in the hotel for a Chamber of Commerce breakfast. The president seemed pleased with his reception and was in a particularly spirited and jovial mood, having fun with Jackie's presence on the trip.
2 years ago, I said that introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting somewhat that same sensation as I travel around Texas.
The plan called for a quick plane trip to Dallas following the Fort Worth breakfast, and then a parade through downtown Dallas that would take the president to the Trade Mart to deliver a noon hour speech. Air Force One arrived at Love Field in Dallas at 11:37 a.m. Before the motorcade began, the president asked that the bubble top be removed from his limousine since it was no longer raining. At 11:50 a.m., the motorcade with police sirens wailing pulled out of Love Field. Traveling with President and Mrs. Kennedy in the presidential limousine was Texas Governor and Mrs. John Connally. The crowds that lined the streets were small for the first few miles, but as the motorcade entered downtown Dallas, throngs of people greeted the presidential party, many with homemade signs welcoming the Kennedys to Dallas. As the motorcade approached the edge of downtown Dallas and turned onto Houston Street, a large sign atop the Texas School Book Depository building flashed the time, 12:30 p.m. The turn from Houston onto Elm Street was a sharp, almost U-turn.
President's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the Trade Mart. I was on Stemmons Freeway earlier, and even the freeway was jam-packed with spectators waiting their chance to see the president as he made his way toward the Trade Mart. It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Stemmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by just a moment, please. Something has happened in the motorcade route. Stand by, please. Parkland Hospital, there has been a shooting. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound. I repeat, a shooting in the motorcade in the downtown area. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound. The president's car is now going past me. The limousine is now traveling at a very high rate of speed. Secret Service men standing up in the limousine. They are armed with submachine guns. It appears as though someone in the limousine might have been hit by the gunfire.
Repeating this bulletin received at WQMR from the United Press. A sniper has fired at President Kennedy.
Just a few minutes ago, the President of the United States turned from Houston Street onto Elm Street on his way to a scheduled luncheon appearance at the Stemmons Trade Mart. As the president turned, applause broke out from a sparse crowd on both sides of the street, and as he went by the Texas School Book Depository, headed for the Triple Underpass, there were three loud, reverberating explosions. Nobody moved. Everyone seemed stunned. A few seemed to look around, wondering who has the firecrackers. Then suddenly, the Secret Service men sprang into action. The convertible bearing the president and Mrs. Kennedy sped away, and officers, both plainclothes and uniformed, seemed to spring from everywhere at once, guns drawn, ordering people to lie flat. There are two witnesses who were near the president's car at the time of the explosions who say that shots were fired. From which upper window, we do not know. We do not and cannot confirm the reports at this time that the president has been shot. One witness says he definitely was shot, that he was hit twice, that he saw the president slump in his seat. As I say, this is not confirmed at this time. From where I am, the police have two witnesses. They are bringing them in now. I'm in the Texas School Book Depository building. They're bringing some witnesses in now. We will try to learn further and relay word to the station. Stay tuned for further details. This is Pierce Allman from the Texas School Book Depository building for WFAA News.
In just 6 short seconds, the course of history was altered. The president was shot. Texas Governor John Connally also lie wounded in the presidential limousine. Secret Service agents scrambled as Agent William Greer slammed the accelerator and sped off to Parkland Hospital. The president's wife cradled his head in her lap during the trip to Parkland. At the scene of the shooting, Dallas police officers sprung into action. At the moment the shots rang out, many people ran up a grassy incline along Elm Street, now known as the Grassy Knoll, thinking this is where the shots came from. Some even reported seeing smoke rising from behind a picket fence that ran atop the hill. Officers searched a railway yard behind this fence while others began a search of the Texas School Book Building. Some claim to have seen a man shooting from this building, and based on these eyewitness reports, the Dallas police radioed out this description of a suspect.
Attention all squad. Attention all squad. The suspect in the shooting at Elm in Houston is reported to be an unknown white male, approximately 30, slender build, height 5 feet 10 inches, weight 165 pounds, reported to be armed with what is thought to be a 30 caliber rifle. Attention all squad, the suspect from Elm in Houston is reported to be an unknown white male, about 30, slender build, 5 feet 10 inches tall, 165 pounds, armed with what is thought to be a 30-30 rifle. No further description at this time or information. 1245 KKB 360.
At approximately 12:50 p.m., with the President and Governor Connally's fate still unknown, Officer J.M. Cheney provides listeners of Dallas radio station KLIF with the first eyewitness account of the shooting.
Struck him in the face, then we knew that someone was shooting at the president.
Moments later, another eyewitness to the shooting, Charles Brim, described what he saw.
I had told my five-year-old boy to wave at him, and as he was waving, the president was looking toward us when the first shot rang out, and he slumped down in the seat. I didn't know for sure. I was positive it was a rifle shot and that it was no joke that he had slumped down. And while I was still trying to make up my mind in a second or two as to what had happened, the second shot rang out. After the first one, his wife knew that he was hit. She reached toward him as he slumped down. I am positive I saw two violent reactions from him as a result of the two shots. There was a third shot, but by that time I had grabbed the boy and run, and the motorcade had speeded up and moved out of the area. I had the unfortunate experience of looking into the man's face when he was shot.
1:20 p.m., a frantic plea for help from a citizen using a police radio. He had found an officer shot in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas.
Hello, police operator.
Go ahead. Go ahead, the citizen using his police.
Hello, we've had a shooting out here.
Where is it at?
The citizen using police radio.
What location?
Between Marsalis and Buckley. It's a police officer. Somebody shot him. What's it?
78 Street. 78.
It's in a police car.
Number 10. 78.
The shooting of Dallas police officer J.D. Tippett was soon to become known to everyone as a part of the puzzle of this tragic day. As the man police were soon to arrest for this shooting was also to become the prime suspect in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. At 1:20 p.m., while searching the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building, Dallas police found a rifle stuffed between some boxes near an open window in the southeast corner with an excellent view of Elm Street below. First reports identified the weapon as a Mauser. Later, officials said the rifle was an Italian Mannlicher Carcano, a cheap but not inefficient gun. At 1:35 p.m., KLIF radio was covering the unfolding events when the shocking news came.
The extent of the injuries to Governor Connally is a closely shrouded secret at the moment.
President Kennedy is dead, Gordon.
Ladies and
this
gentlemen,
is official
the
word.
The president is dead. The president, ladies and gentlemen, is dead.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th president of the United States, was dead. Texas Governor John Connally was seriously wounded. The official announcement from Parkland Hospital, made by presidential aide Malcolm Kilduff, said simply that the president died at approximately 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. The new president was to be Lyndon Baines Johnson. America, in shock, ground to a halt. Schools were closed. Offices and assembly lines shut down. The world looked to Dallas horrified at the fact that this young, vibrant president was murdered. At approximately 1:45 p.m., Dallas police were notified that a suspect in the shooting of J.D. Tippett had entered the Texas Theater. The movie playing at the time, War is Hell. But real drama would unfold inside the theater this day. As Dallas police entered the theater, the projectionist stopped the film, turned up the house lights. A young man jumped up screaming, "This is it." Patrolman M.N. McDonald scuffled with the man and soon had him in handcuffs. The suspect was identified as one Lee Harvey Oswald. Oswald almost immediately was the suspect in the killing of the president. Police determined he was an employee of the Texas School Book Depository, from which witnesses said they saw a man shooting, and Oswald fit the general description. At about the same time police were arresting Oswald, Lyndon Johnson was being given the oath of office aboard Air Force One as the 36th President of the United States. The only recording made of this historic event was on a secretary's small dictation machine.
I solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will to the best of my ability.
Will to the best of my ability.
Preserve.
Preserve.
Protect.
Protect.
Defend.
Defend.
Constitution of the United States.
Constitution of the United States.
The new president immediately returned to Washington, as investigators worried about the possibilities of a conspiracy to kill both men. Meanwhile, in Dallas, Lee Harvey Oswald was now the only suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy. In Dallas, on the night of the assassination, police officers permitted Oswald to speak to reporters at a chaotic press conference in a crowded room at the city jail.
I really don't know what the situation is. Nobody has told me anything except that I'm accused of murdering a policeman. I know nothing more than that. I do request for someone to come forward to give me a legal assistance.
You killed the president?
No, I've not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question.
Shortly after Oswald's session with reporters, Peace Justice David Johnson reads the formal charges against Lee Harvey Oswald.
This is in the name of and by the authority of the state of Texas. Personally appeared before me, the undersigned authority, this affiant, who after being by me duly sworn, disposes and says your affiant has good reason to believe and does believe that one Lee Harvey Oswald, hereinafter styled defendant, heretofore on or about the 22nd day of November, A.D. 1963, in the county of Dallas and state of Texas, did then and there unlawfully, voluntarily, and with malice aforethought, kill John F. Kennedy by shooting him with a gun. That is attested as the affiant J.W. Fritz against the peace and dignity of the state of Texas, sworn to and subscribed before me this 22nd day of November 1963, Henry Wade, Criminal District Attorney, Dallas County, Texas. And this instrument was then passed to me at 11:26 p.m. and filed as cause number F154 in the Justice Court Precinct 2 of Dallas County and is attested by myself.
Early on the morning of November 23rd, Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry tells of evidence against Oswald.
The fact that he was seen carrying a package through the building. The fact that...
When was he carrying that package? Sunday?
Yesterday morning.
You figure that was a disassembled rifle?
I don't think it was disassembled. It was, the package was large enough for the rifle to be intact.
Chief, do you have any concern for the safety of your prisoner in view of the high feeling among the people of Dallas over the assassination of the president?
No, but precautions will be taken, of course, but I'm not, I don't think that, that the people will try to take the prisoner away from us.
Sunday morning, November 24th, the nation, still numbed by the events in Dallas, watched on television as the president's coffin was carried on a caisson drawn by six matching grays, with the three on the right riderless. To the sound of muffled drums and bagpipes, the procession ended at the United States Capitol. At precisely the same hour, Dallas police officials were underway with the transfer of Lee Harvey Oswald from the city jail to the county jail. As the television networks cut away from the ceremonies in Washington to cover the transfer of the prisoner in Dallas, another shocking event was to unfold on live television in the living rooms of millions of Americans.
Now the prisoner wearing a black sweater, he has changed from his t-shirt, is being moved out toward an armored car. Being led out by Captain Fritz. There is the prisoner. Do you have anything to say in your defense? There's a shot. Oswald has been shot. Oswald has been shot. A shot rang out. Mass confusion here. Holy mackerel. There's a mass confusion there. Rolling and fighting. As he was being led out, now he's being led back. He was thrown to the ground. The police have the entire area blocked off. Did you see it?
Eh?
What happened?
Yeah, I saw the guy. There's a man, a rather stocky man with a hat on. A dark...
Stocky man with a hat on?
Yeah, he rushed, he crushed, and he shot him there. And I saw the flash, and I was watching. Oh! And that's it.
My statement will be very brief. Oswald expired at 1:07 p.m.
Died?
He died.
Lee Harvey Oswald, now himself the victim of violence, was shot by a Dallas nightclub operator named Jack Rubenstein, known as Jack Ruby. Ruby claimed he shot Oswald in order to spare Mrs. Kennedy from having to testify at an Oswald trial. With Oswald dead, questions concerning the assassination of President Kennedy were everywhere. Was Oswald working alone? Was there a foreign conspiracy, a domestic conspiracy, to kill the president? Before the questions could begin to be answered, the nation had to lay their president to rest. Monday, November 25th, again millions of Americans found themselves before their television sets, watching the funeral of their late president. On November 29th, 1963, President Lyndon Johnson signed Executive Order No. 11130, creating a presidential commission to investigate the assassination of President Kennedy. With Chief Justice Earl Warren as chairman, it was soon to become known as the Warren Commission. The commission was directed to evaluate all the facts of the assassination and the subsequent killing of the alleged assassin and report its findings and conclusions to the president. Over the course of its 10-month investigation, the Warren Commission took testimony of 552 witnesses, while the FBI and the Secret Service interviewed 26,550 persons. The final report of the Warren Commission was submitted to President Johnson on September 24, 1964. The testimony and exhibits filled 27 volumes. The commission's findings in the so-called Warren Report was that Lee Harvey Oswald fired 3 shots from the 6th floor of the Texas School Book Depository building, wounding Governor John Connally and killing President John Kennedy, and that Oswald acted alone and was not involved in any conspiracy, foreign or domestic. The commission also concluded that Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, again as a lone killer, and was not related in any way to a conspiracy to kill the president. One member of the commission was then-House Republican Minority Leader and later President Gerald Ford, who stated his belief in the integrity and conclusions of the Warren Commission.
The problem that we had of determining who committed the assassination and sought to get the answers from all of the evidence that we could find. We did not enter into our responsibilities with any predetermined conclusions. We had an assignment to get the facts and to come up with conclusions as to the person or persons who committed the assassination. Tremendous number of witnesses were interviewed. Depositions were taken by the staff. The net result was, in my judgment, the commission performed its function in a constructive, thorough, and objective manner.
For years after the assassination, dozens of books critical of the findings of the Warren Report were published. The controversy over the killing continued. 13 years after the assassination, in September of 1976, public pressure forced Congress to establish a special House Select Committee to investigate assassinations. House Resolution 1540 authorized a complete investigation into the deaths of President Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. The two-and-a-half-year, $5.5 million investigation concluded that, quote, "It is probable that the president was assassinated as a result of a conspiracy," unquote. Many questions remain. Who was Lee Harvey Oswald? Did he have connections, as many suspect, with U.S. intelligence agencies? Was there an involvement among organized crime figures, as the House Select Committee investigation hinted at? What about the role of Cuban exiles angry at Kennedy for his perceived lack of commitment to the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion? And what about Jack Ruby? Was there more to his killing of Oswald than his claim of wanting to spare Jackie Kennedy the agony of going through a trial? An interesting interview with Jack Ruby just before his death is still as mysterious now as it was then. The interview was crudely recorded, but very puzzling.
What do you think I can say? What is your name? And I'll know how to
do it. Harry Kennedy.
Harry Kennedy. Everything pertaining to what's happening has never come to the surface. The world will never know the true facts of what occurred, my motives. In other words, I'm the only person in the background that knows the truth pertaining to everything relating to my circumstances.
Do you think it'll ever come out?
No, because unfortunately, the people have so much to gain and have such an ulterior motive for putting me in a position I'm in. We'll never let the true facts come of our boards to the world.
Now, these people are in very high positions, Jack.
Yes.
There is the possibility we will never know the full story of the crime of the century, but the whos and whys of that tragic day are overshadowed by the history of what happened. A young president in the prime of his life, senselessly murdered in a cowardly act of violence that stunned the world and altered the course of history. And the violence continued. 5 years after the assassination of President Kennedy, black civil rights leader Martin Luther King was gunned down in Memphis, Tennessee. And then in June of 1968, another Kennedy became a victim of political assassination.
Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible? Is that possible? It could. Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen? It is possible. He has. Not only Senator Kennedy. Oh my God. Senator Kennedy has been shot.
Later in the 1970s, President Gerald Ford became the target of two assassination attempts. And in March of 1981, John Hinckley waited outside the Washington Hilton Hotel, and as President Reagan was leaving the hotel, fired shots hitting President Reagan in the chest, seriously wounding a Secret Service agent, a Washington, D.C. policeman, and the presidential press secretary. In these years since the assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas, the memory of the 35th president is still fresh in the hearts and minds of millions of Americans. His voice can still be heard pleading for the civil rights of all Americans, standing toe-to-toe with the Soviet Union over missiles in Cuba, or delivering a most memorable speech to a huge crowd in Berlin. We can only hope and pray that the political violence that felled this young president will never happen again. But as Bobby Kennedy said shortly before he himself was killed, no one knows who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed.
The president's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark.
As the president turned, applause broke out from a sparse crowd on both sides of the street, and as he went by the Texas School Book Depository, headed for the Triple Underpass, there were three loud, reverberating explosions.
President Kennedy is dead, Gordon.
Ladies and
this
gentlemen,
is official
the
word.
The president is dead. The president, ladies and gentlemen, is dead.
Without any doubt, he's the killer. The law says beyond a reasonable doubt to a moral certainty, which I there's no question that he was the killer of President Kennedy.
There's a shot. Oswald has been shot.
I will do my best. That is all I can do.